What's happening, everybody? Welcome into the final hour of our Friday edition of Sports Talk, going until 7 o'clock this evening. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long hanging out with you. And we're at the break, and you guys managed to tick off Jeff on a Friday, folks.
Oh, I'm not ticked off. I just got stuff to say.
So looking at our Oaken Heart Jewelers talking text line, what happened here, Jeff?
Well, okay, so apparently I don't use facts and logic. I don't know anything about football. And C.J. Stroud is the reason that the Saints should start Spencer Rattler week one. I don't know. Now, first of all, logic dictates that if you have to use an outlier to prove your point, then your point is not a good point, right? When you have to compare and say, well, maybe he's Brock Purdy, maybe he's Tom Brady, the reason those are the two names you go to are because they're the only two examples, right? Now, we can go back to 2000, and I did, because this is something I looked up yesterday because I was asked about it, because this is the take that I have, that typically when you look at the hit rate of quarterbacks in the NFL draft, when you allow them to sit and learn, when they start games, they seem to be ready. And I was able to find 18 examples of first-round quarterbacks going back to the year 2000 that did not start a game until week 10 or later of their rookie season. Now, there were several that didn't start until year two, year three. Drew Brees isn't even on that list because he was the number 32 pick, and he was the first pick of the second round because there was only 31 teams in the NFL at that point. If it was today, he would be the 32 pick. That'd be a first rounder. He didn't start until week one of year two. Some of the other names on that list.
Same with Pat Mahomes, right?
Chad Pennington, which you could say, hey, whatever. He was second in MVP with voting 1 year, so he was pretty solid.
Yeah.
Michael Vick, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Jay Cutler, Jared Goff, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Jordan Love. That's 10 of those 18 names. I didn't even include Rex Grossman because Rex Grossman was bad, but he did go to a Super Bowl, so he wasn't that bad. Either way, he's one of those eight that I did not include. That's a 55% hit rate. That's a lot better than the first-round hit rate of starting quarterbacks in the NFL.
Like I said, you fired up Jeff now.
Now, we're going to go back. Okay, Derek Carr's terrible. All of Derek Carr's throws are off target. He holds the ball too long in the pocket. These are all things you hear. Here's the thing. The NFL tracks these things. These stats are available. And if you want me to look at the stats, okay, on target throw percentage, this is Pro Football Reference. Derek Carr, 79.7%. That's fifth in the NFL. Bad throw percentage. They track these things. Again, you're talking about 15.3%. That's 16th in the NFL. So you're talking middle of the pack. Pressure stats. Let's look. Okay. Pocket time. Time spent in the pocket before you either release the ball or you have pressure and that blows up the play. Derek Carr, 2.3 seconds. That ranks 26th in the NFL. Derek Carr, last season, held the ball the sixth lowest amount of time on average in the pocket of any quarterback.
Wow.
Okay,
so I wouldn't have guessed that for sure.
Now, he was blitzed 172 times, that ranks 7th in the NFL. He was sacked, 31 times, that's 15th in the NFL. So now, how do these stats measure up? I don't know, but if you're telling me I don't use logic or statistics to look at this information, you're wrong. It's just, if you're going to use purely anecdotal evidence of I saw him hold the ball too long that one time, so he must hold the ball too long every time, the stats don't support that. So we can have a conversation about that, but don't tell me that I don't look at the statistics, because I do. And sometimes they don't make a ton of sense, because I would agree. I don't think he's always holding the ball. I don't think he's always getting the ball out on time. I don't think his throws are always on target. But the statistics would show that, I don't know, it's not as bad as you're making it out to be. So we can go from there.
Well, now that you're all fired up, we're going to try to calm you down some. We'll get some soothing tones of Deuce McAllister. He was on the Tommy Tucker Show early this morning, obviously talking Saints football as they get ready for Carolina week one now of the regular season, kicking off next Sunday. But Deuce was asked by Tommy his thoughts on the 53-man roster, the initial 53.
I think you're probably still missing two players that they will continue to try to add to that roster overall. You have a good mix. It's a young roster, probably something that we haven't seen in a couple years, but you can see that they're starting to get younger and probably still need some speed in a couple of positions. Injuries are probably making you be a little fat at the heavy, not necessarily fat, but heavy at the defensive tackle position because of Binky or Colin Sanders, his calf injury. You're carrying probably extra defensive tackle there where you normally would not. Outside of that, it's probably what you expect. You know, I know a lot of people are upset about the offensive line and not adding anybody via trade to the active roster. You can always rotate up a guy now with the practice squad. So if you need to elevate a guy in that situation, you can do so. And here's the thing about this particular roster, as it sits today, I think it's primed to try to win a game, not the complete season. I think they're trying to win a game, and that a game obviously is against the Carolina Panthers. Now, how you kind of, I guess, finagle it a little bit to get ready for the Dallas game will depend on who's available, you know, as far as injuries are concerned, and then what's the best matchups to try to attack Dallas. And so that's kind of what they've done up until this point.
Deuce then got into, were there any surprises for him on the guys that made this 53?
There are a couple guys, you know, and I think sometimes what comes into play is when I have a young guy and he's probably outperformed what I originally thought for him. And one of the guys that, you know, you talk about how that comes about, being able to expose a player, Rico. I mean, if you are going to expose him to waivers, teams are going to snap him up. And so he basically outperformed what the perception was for him as a player. And, you know, being an undrafted player, undrafted rookie free agent, I think the Saints, signed four of those guys. Mason Tipton was another one. And so anytime you get a player like that, it's hats off to the scouting department. And they beat some players out. I mean, they beat some other guys out. And so whether you say, well, they made the initial 53, yes, that's correct. Any player that you expose to waivers, you know, you always take the risk of losing them to another team. But a veteran, you know, he has a choice to sign with who he chooses once he's released of his contract. And, you know, you hope to get him back, but that doesn't always happen.
And that clip there, Jeff, Deuce mentioning Rico, obviously Rico Payton, one of the big surprises and I guess good stories from this Saints squad going into this season.
Rico!
Rico Suave.
Makes you want to watch Starship Troopers. No, Rico, he's a good story. I mean, and we'll see how much run he gets as a rookie. I think he and Mason Tipton, you know, we'll talk about them a lot, but they're probably not going to be active on game days unless you have some injuries. But no, and Deuce talked about this too. And, you know, if you had asked me in the first week of camp to cut 10 players, he would have been in that group. Because he was struggling. And that's not to say, like, he didn't have NFL potential at that point, but you're talking about a player who started coming out of Division II. Everything's going 100 miles an hour. He kept working. He got opportunities because Marshawn and Paulson were hurt.
Right.
He, Shamar, John Charles, Rajon Wright. You could have made an argument for all three of those guys to make the roster. Now, Rajon got hurt. I made it a little less of a conversation. I think it was turf toe. He's on IR. He's done for the season. It's a bummer for him because I thought he had a solid camp. I thought all three of those guys had a solid camp. But I think at the end of the day, you were like, Rico, he showed too much. He got targeted 13 times in the first 2 weeks of the preseason.
Yeah, I think he only allowed three receptions?
You're trying to sneak a player onto the practice squad. That's not a good way to do it. and here's the thing. You know, that's got to be everyone's goal, is to play so well that they can't sneak you onto the practice squad. And that's what Rico did. And he just kept getting better and better and better. And the potential that you saw with him is really intriguing. And then the same thing could be said for a guy like Charlie Smith. You know, the interesting thing is like, okay, why would the Saints try to hide their kicker so that they can sneak him on the practice squad? Well, go look at Braden Narveson, the kicker for the Titans, the guy who actually missed the 58-yard kick that Samson Nakua almost returned for a touchdown.
Yeah.
He got claimed on waivers by the Packers. They were looking for a new starting kicker. And they just kept sending that guy out there. Here, kick another one. Mike Haas even said on the broadcast, it's like, well, they're just trying him out for other teams right now.
Right. Big old job audition for the entire league.
So, like, there are teams looking around being like, okay, I think that, you know, like the Saints did with Will Lutz when they brought Will Lutz in. So, you know, if you sent out Charlie Smith in the preseason and had him kick 10 60-yard field goals, I don't think he would be around right now. So, you know, like, teams are paying attention. They're looking for those guys. And Rico made himself a guy you could not put on waivers. So, yeah.
Looking at the Saints team, obviously everyone talks about the strength being the defense for this squad. And Deuce was asked, how is the defense looking going into the regular season?
I think you're going to have a really good group. I mean, for the Saints to be successful, that group has to be, you know, in my opinion, a top 10 group. And when you talk about one of the things that they have to do well is probably be able to create turnovers. I think you've got to be able to get after the quarterback. the defensive ends have looked good. The biggest thing for me for them is, can they stay healthy? I mean, that group has to be disruptive. Like we talked about, Colin Sanders has a calf issue, so you're carrying an extra player or two in that position. You know, if they can stop the run, then you earn the right to rush the passer. I've always felt that way, and I heard that a long time ago from some coaches. And, you know, if you don't stop the run, then you can't rush the passer, and that's what it's about in this league. Linebackers, you got faster. Having DeMario back, having Pete 100%, and then adding Willie Gay to that mix, they'll be a versatile group. They can play 12 personnel with three down, and you don't have to go nickel. You can get exotic with some of your looks. I can get you three down, D-lineman, and then still keep three linebackers on the field and still keep my core secondary in the backfield as well. So that's going to bode well for them. From the corner standpoint, as long as your starters are healthy, you feel really good about it. I know a lot of gripe has been made about not having a guy next to Tyrann Mathieu. I just want them to be able to go out there and do their job. You know, if you have to match personnel subbing in and out of safety, so be it. You know, as long as they don't put themselves in a position where they're the weak link, I think that they'll be fine on the back end.
You mentioned this before, Jeff. Obviously, that safety position wasn't very good last year with Marcus May around, and can only, I guess you would say, from his lackadaisical play, will be get an improvement whoever fills in this year.
I don't think lackadaisical is fair. I just don't think he ever lived up to what you would hope for from Marcus.
We'll see what he does in Miami.
He didn't seem to be in position enough of the time. he's in Miami now. But yeah, that's why, like, when I look at, okay, they could have added Justin Simmons, that would have been a major upgrade probably. I think you're going to improve one way or the other, because I don't think you were getting a particularly quality play out of Marcus May. And you were able to still have a top 10 defense with the group out there this year. And yeah, you feel like you've upgraded the pass rush, feel like you've upgraded in terms of Alante should be better in the slot than he was. Kool-Aid's around. You can figure out something to do with Kool-Aid. So I'm okay with the defense. I think defense, if this team struggles, if they have a bad year, if we're going into the offseason saying, tear it all down, start fresh, do something else, it's not going to be because of the defense.
Yeah, hopefully. I know there's some guys on there, obviously up there in age, like a DeMario Davis, Cam Jordan, Tyrann Mathieu. But Cam had a down year last year, but the other two still performing at a high level for this squad and hopefully can maintain. A group that's solid in leadership on all three levels of that defense, and definitely need that to continue for this team. Looking at now fantasy football, we're going to take a break and be right back with Scott Smith, fantasy football, also betting analyst at 4for4.com. Get his takes on who you should be picking, who should be punting on in your fantasy football draft when we return after this on WWL. Welcome back in. Time for a little fantasy frenzy, getting into fantasy football talk with Scott Smith, fantasy football and betting analyst for at 4for4.com. How you been, Scott?
Good, man. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Getting ready for the season, obviously. And curious your take here. A lot of folks now this season, it seems like everyone, that number one top overall pick, if you have it in the draft, it was like a shoe-in for Christian McCaffrey. But it's been a little cutesy lately, I'm seeing. Like, maybe it's some folks going Bijan, some folks going Breece Hall. Just wondering your take. Is it still definitely taking with Christian McCaffrey if you have that number one overall selection?
Well, one of the things I think it depends on is what your league format is, whether or not you're in a standard league or a PPR. Another thing is, look, Christian McCaffrey's getting a little bit older. He's got some miles on the tread there. And so I don't think you can go wrong if you go ahead and take one of Christian McCaffrey, and you can even go with either the two wide receivers in CeeDee Lamb or Tyreek Hill. But definitely grabbing one of those top three running backs in the first round is a smart decision this year.
So, okay, Scott, I have a draft at 8 p.m. tonight, so this is going to be a make or break 20 minutes or so where you decide who I'm going to draft. That's kind of a joke, but it's also not. I'm curious what your strategy is. So I'm in a 2QB league, and, you know, I'm usually wait on the quarterback guy, but in this league I've been in for a few years, like, if I don't take a quarterback in the first round, I almost always come in, like, 10th. I'm just curious, what is your strategy in a 2QB league? Would you reach in the first two rounds for a quarterback, or would you take one? What would you typically do there?
I don't think you need to reach for one. I think generally you can go through the first two rounds in super flex leagues like that where you start two quarterbacks, and you can go ahead and grab the best player available, whether it be a running back or a wide receiver. And I think in that third and fourth round, the thing that I would look to do is to go ahead and go with a guy, a quarterback that you can get in a value, somebody like Brock Purdy who has three weapons that are getting there drafted in the first three to four rounds. Another guy like Jared Goff, who I like a lot, and you can even go ahead and try to pair him with one of the rookie quarterbacks in Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels. Jared Goff's a guy who plays 14 out of his 17 games this year indoors. Mm. He's significantly better indoors, averaging 23.17 PPR points indoors versus right under 13 points per game outside. So Goff's a guy that I trust in that Lions offense that has a really good offensive line and really good coaching there.
When you're looking at some of the folks talking about Justin Jefferson, obviously he's going to be a first-round pick in the fantasy format, I think all fantasy formats still, but it seems he's taken a little bit of a knock in his where his draft slot is just because of the quarterback this year. Is that fair for you think, or is Jefferson still a high-end first-round selection?
I kind of have him in the middle of the first round. At this point in time, with some of the shenanigans going on with Ja'Marr Chase and his contract like desires right now, I actually have Chase behind Jefferson. Look, I think it's fair to say that you're going to have a little bit of an efficiency drop-off there, you know, going from Kirk Cousins to Sam Darnold. But that offense is still run good. And you also have to factor in that T.J. Hockenson is going to start the year off, probably miss about six games. So I think the volume is going to be there to make up for the lack of efficiency. I still see Justin Jefferson, when you look at the Vegas odds, they have his over and under as like 1,250 yards. I think that's more than reasonable expectation for him sitting there in the first round.
You know, so I feel like fantasy football, every year we look at it and we're like, oh, well, this guy was great last year, so I'm going to draft him based off of what he did last year. But it almost always seems like, hey, there's – I don't know what the percentage turnover is, but there's always almost always a significant turnover of like, oh, this guy was expected to be here, he's really here. Who would be some players that you would look at and say they're kind of primed for a drop-off from the season that they had a year ago and currently might be getting a little overdrafted?
Rashad White there in Tampa Bay is a guy that I have some concern about. He finishes the running back five in PPR leagues last year, and he really had no competition, you know, last year as far as running the ball. He was not very efficient. He did a lot of what he did off of volume. Bucky Irving got drafted out of Oregon in the fourth round, has looked good. And the real issue they have with Rashad White as far as the coaching staff is he kind of dances around the line a little bit before he hits the hole, kind of like Le'Veon Bell used to do, but he doesn't have the same vision as what Le'Veon Bell has. So the coaches really have, you know, liked what Bucky Irving's put on tape there in the preseason, the way he hits the hole. He's a little bit undersized, but he has held up in pass blocking scenarios. So I think Bucky Irving will be a little bit of a surprise, and I expect Rashad White to have a little bit of a dip from what he did last year, and he's a guy that I'm kind of shying away from.
All right, and now the important question: what is your read on Alvin Kamara in fantasy leagues? Because I've seen a lot of variation of, like, you know, this is a guy who could potentially be, you know, a top five fantasy scorer, or he could fall off a cliff and not do anything. It's a new offense. Where would you draft Alvin Kamara if he was on the board? Where would you be willing to strike for Alvin?
Well, I think his value is accurate where his ADP is at currently at the top of the fifth round. You look at what he did last year, and again, we talk about what format you're playing in, whether it's half PPR or PPR. Naturally, in those formats, with the way he receives the ball, he's going to go ahead and have a lot more value than what he would in a standard league with the percentage of points that he puts up from receptions. But I think his upside's still there. I think the offense is absolutely going to be better than what it was, and just, you know, how it's been stagnant. And you look at specifically, you know, how Carr likes to throw the ball and dump it off to running backs. I think the value for him is still there. I like him there in the fifth round and would definitely consider him, you know, over some guys like Rashad White that I just mentioned and you know, some other guys that are sitting there in that same range.
Yeah, the other guy I'm looking at is Joe Mixon. He's intriguing just because that pairing with C.J. Stroud and that Texans offense with all those wide receivers, it feels like that's a great opportunity for him. And he's kind of sitting there, what I'm seeing is like RB16. Would you say that's low for him? Because it feels low.
I don't don't think it's low when you look at what his efficiency metrics have been over the last couple of years. He had all the opportunity in the world with Cincinnati last year and really struggled kind of within that 10-yard line and to punch some of the touchdowns in. I think he's going to a little bit more stable offense as far as the offensive line goes there with the Texans. But I think his value is right there in the middle of the fourth round. I'd feel comfortable taking him there. If you go wide receiver early in the first three rounds, you know, both him and another guy like Kenneth Walker are two guys in the fourth round I'm comfortable with having as my first running back if I draft, you know, a wide receiver early there in the first three rounds.
Scott, when you're looking at some of the guys that broke onto the fantasy scene last year, big time were Kyren Williams, Puka Nacua, obviously both on the LA Rams. Just wondering for you, who could be those really under-the-radar running backs or wide receivers that you think could surprise folks that aren't really considered, you know, high to mid-round draft picks even?
Yeah, one of the guys that I'm looking at, Jerome Ford, is going to be the starting running back in Cleveland. Nick right. Chubb, like, shredded his knee last year. And Jerome Ford's a guy that's going in the 10th round right now. I think there's a lot of opportunity to go ahead and draft him. You can also go ahead and pair him with the running back Jonathan Brooks out of Carolina, because he's going to go ahead and start off the year on the PUP list. I think Jerome Ford offers a lot of value, both in the 10th round and as a PPR standalone value, if Nick Chubb comes back late in the season. But you don't know exactly how that's going to play out as far as how the recovery is going to go for Nick Chubb. He's had multiple knee injuries. And I think Cleveland in particular is going to go ahead and transition to a little bit more of a passing offense than what they traditionally have. They've got some offensive line improvements as well. But I think getting a guy like him in the 10th round and pairing him with a rookie like Jonathan Brooks, who was the top running back drafted, who I think as he gets healthy, he's going to come on stronger later in the year, the same very similar to what Breece Hall did last year. I think pairing two guys like that at running back can make a lot of sense if you go wide receiver early.
Yeah, so this is kind of more of a broad question, but you know, it's always interesting to me. There's all these different strategies you can employ. You know, zero running back is always fun because I think it kind of forces you to scour the waiver wire each week trying to find that running back that might come onto the scene. And I remember Jordan Howard one year, I was able to find him. It was rookie season. And I found him because I desperately needed a running back because I didn't draft any. And I think it's interesting. But do you have a favorite strategy? And obviously it'll change based on kind of the league you're in. But in a standard scoring league, do you have kind of a favorite strategy? Say you were drafting fourth or fifth in the first round, what would be your go-to kind of draft strategy?
Yeah, definitely in a standard draft, drafted in that 4 to 5 range, I'm looking for one of the big three running backs, whether it be McCaffrey, Breece Hall, or Bijan Robinson, to go ahead and drop down. Definitely, you know, anchoring my team with one of those top running backs. And in the second round this year, it's kind of been no man's land where you either have to reach for a wide receiver or take one of the running backs. I would go ahead and try to double dip at running back and get one of the other running backs, whether it's a Jahmyr Gibbs, a Kyren Williams, a Travis Etienne, and even taking a huge swing with as dynamic as what Devon Achane was there last year. I don't mind going ahead and starting off running back heavy in standard leagues. I think there's a lot of value there in rounds 3, 4, and 5. You know, with guys like Rashee Rice has been drastically underdrafted all year because people are worried about his legal issues. But, you know, you can get those guys that I project to have, you know, wide receiver one type of upside there in rounds 3, 4, and 5. So starting off very running back heavy in rounds 1 and 2 in standard leagues makes a lot of sense to me.
Scott, what should we expect out of a guy like Derrick Henry going into this season? Obviously, it seems like a perfect fit for what he does paired up with the Baltimore Ravens. But obviously, he's up there in age now, and you have a quarterback, too, that eats up a bunch of rushing yards as well.
Yeah, for me, I'm fading Derrick Henry, and it's not one of those things where I necessarily think that he's going to have a bad year, but there is that age cliff that always comes. Look, he's got a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's a bigger back. Like, eventually, he's going to go ahead and fall off of that cliff, and he's one of those guys this year that I'm willing to pass on, and if somebody beats me with Derrick Henry, it's just a decision that I've made because I'm going to go ahead and pass on him. I would just rather some of the younger running backs that have less wear and tear on their body, and that's just my personal preference. But, you know, if he's your guy, go ahead and swing at him. It's just not something that I'm going to go ahead and do, and it's really just, you know, for the wear and tear and the age cliff that he has.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Derek is in a situation where it's not unlike Taysom Hill, where it's like you kind of watch the offense and you understand, okay, this might be positive for the offense. I think it's not necessarily a bad situation in terms of the production, but from a fantasy perspective, I don't know if the ceiling is as high as I want it to be. Is that kind of your read on it?
Yeah, for me, I just think there's a lot of danger there. Specifically, when I'm drafting within the first four rounds, I'm going for, you know, safe upside, and I think Derrick Henry has that danger there. And, you know, specifically when we're talking about Taysom Hill, I actually have Taysom Hill as a sleeper this year. Last year, he finished as a tight end 12 in PPR leagues, and when you start looking at it over the history, over the last 2 years, you know, inside the five-yard line, both him and Kamara have the same amount of carries with inside the five-yard line. I think when you look at the upside and the difference-making games that Taysom Hill can have going into a new offense where he might have a little bit of a Debo Samuel type of role with you know, Kubiak and all coming over, I think Taysom Hill, if you miss out on all of those early tight ends, like the top 8 to 10, I don't mind taking a swing at Taysom Hill and pairing him with another, you know, upside tight end late, whether it be like a Noah Fant or Zach Ertz or somebody that you can depend on. But I think Taysom Hill's got some upside this year.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone madder than the guy I beat when the Saints faced Seattle a couple years ago, and Taysom had like 5 touchdowns. He had 40 points from the tight end position. But, you know, it is funny you bring that up because, like, I get some angry people in my Twitter mentions every now and then when I tweet about Taysom Hill, and it's like, you must be an Alvin Kamara fantasy owner. Because, like, there's no one who hates Taysom Hill's usage more than Alvin Kamara fantasy owners, because it feels like he's just vulturing touchdowns. And I do, like, it's like if Taysom didn't exist, I feel like Alvin's ADP would be a lot higher.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And just you start looking at Kendra Miller, who was a guy that a lot of people had as a sleeper coming into this year. The injury issues that he's had, you start looking at the rest of the depth there at running back. And with them using Taysom Hill and with Alvin Kamara getting a little bit up there with age, it just makes sense. You know, you're going to go ahead and ride Taysom Hill and get as much as you can out of him with the Swiss Army knife that he is. And look, like, he's been successful there. When you get down to that 5 to 10 yard line, he's had success. So it just makes sense from a coaching standpoint.
Scott Smith of 444.com. You get all your fantasy advice there. Tell us a little about 444.com. Scott, what can folks log in and find on there?
Yeah, so right now we're in the thick of things for fantasy football. We have an aggregate ADP rankings list where you can go on there and you can have an average of all the ADPs for the different sites, whether it be ESPN, Yahoo. We've got our DFS content. We've got MMA betting content that I do. You know, we've got, you know, a whole list of things, and right now we're actually going ahead and doing some promos, $10 off your first month if you use code TROPHY. And look, you know, anything that you need, we have on there, from betting to fantasy football, DFS lineups. You know, we're kind of a one-stop shop for the fantasy football season.
Yeah, I know. Folks got to love this. Right on the front page, it says 92% of subscribers made the playoffs last year, so that's a huge plus.
Yeah, we've got a whole crew putting in a lot of work right now.
I appreciate the time, Scott. Be talking to you a lot during the season, and good luck drafting. I know it's a big draft weekend for a lot of folks.
Yeah, good luck to you guys tonight.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Scott Smith, fantasy football and betting analyst for 444.com. Check out all his work there. Looking forward to another draft we're going to have coming up. What is it, Wednesday, Jeff? Me, you, Charlie, and some of the other folks here at WWL.com. Getting ready for our fantasy league. Last year, I came in the third spot.
I forgot the league existed after a couple of weeks. So hopefully this year I can remember it. You guys like to use ESPN. I'm a Yahoo guy. I tried to convince you to make this shift, and y'all said no. So.
I've been Yahoo, ESPN, wherever you want me to draft, I'll go. But I hear you. I do like the interactive Yahoo app a lot better.
I just have so much bandwidth for apps on my phone. I open like 4 a day and then I stop.
We'll see. Maybe if you get the top pick in this year's draft, you'll pay attention more.
No. We'll see.
I'll be back with more sports talk as we return right after this on WWL. If you're in the city tomorrow and you want to meet up with Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, and Mike Dettillier, check out the Rouse's Market uptown on Chapultepec. They'll be there from 1 to 4 for a special edition of Sports Talk celebrating everything football. Start of LSU in the college football season, the official start of the NFL season, regular season games that matter, you know, plus the Labor Day weekend. You can also stop in the Rouse's and get everything you do to celebrate. Hang out with the two Saints legends, Bobby Hebert and Deuce McAllister, and our NFL and college football analyst, Mike Dettillier. That's the Rouse's Market on Chapultepec tomorrow, 1 to 4 o'clock, right here on WWL and also on the free Odyssey app. Coming back with more sports talk, closing it out as we head to the weekend right here on WWL.
You made the 53, man. You've earned it. You had a hell of a journey from being an international practice squad guy to now you're on the 53, man.
Man.
I mean, you got a viral clip on the internet of chasing down a guy. I think when we talk about building a culture and, you know, getting guys that have made it the right, they're going to do things, and the sign that's out there that says play like a Titan, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? You fit every last single one of those things. You don't know this, but where we were sitting at the game on Sunday in New Orleans, and New Orleans fans hate everybody. Mm-hmm. After you chased the guy down, the fans next to us, I was getting up to go do TV. Guy was like, you better not cut 89. And then the third quarter, you had a catch, yeah. and they start cheering for you, you know, which says a lot. You know what I mean? And that's a testament to your work. So, you know, it's guys like you, man, make our job hard.
Back here on Sports Talk, you're hearing Thomas Odukuwaya.
Odukoya. Yeah, that's the coach telling me he made the roster. The Titans like to do this thing where they call the players into their office on cutdown day and give them a heart attack, only to say, you made the roster. Congratulations. Because what do you think when the coach calls you in there? Definitely don't think you made it.
Definitely not good news, right.
But it was funny because that's the guy who, if you remember Samson Nakua's long field goal return, he's the guy who knocked him out of bounds at the end. He was actually their former international player. So Charlie Smith is the Saints international player. That was him last year. He was on the practice squad, and he made the roster this year. So,
do Saints fans really hate everyone?
I don't know, but apparently that's the reputation they have, which I found amusing. But, yeah, so at least someone made the roster because of that play.
Yeah, and right now Samson Nakua is still without a job.
Doesn't have a roster spot.
Who knows? Maybe eventually gets back on the Saints practice squad. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the show. Have a great Labor Day weekend. And, you know, guys, you have any wonderful plans? Because mine's pretty much going to be on the couch or hopefully hanging out by a pool somewhere.
Well, my wife is in Montana, so I'm by myself. But
you and the dog.
I was going to try to golf tomorrow, and then I looked, there's an 80% chance of rain, so I'm not doing that. So, yeah, I think I'm going to maybe watch some Netflix, you know, hang out with a dog, pet a dog.
Anything exciting for you, Charlie, besides some baseball watching?
I have some competition with Mike Dettillier for week one of the college football season. So our pick six,
it's a standalone week.
It's just Mike versus me. And, you know, we got the first game both right because I count pushes as wins.
Right.
UNC minus two that technically worked out against Minnesota last night. We got five games throughout the weekend that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. And
are different?
Three.
Okay.
Three of the remaining five. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Talk to you on Monday. It'll be Second Guess with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and Mike Dettillier, talking all about that LSU versus USC matchup. Have a good one, everyone, and have a great night.
Peace.
Later. If you're in the city tomorrow and you want to meet up with Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, and Mike Dettillier, check out the Rouse's Market uptown on Chapultepec. They'll be there from 1 to 4 for a special edition of Sports Talk celebrating everything football. Start of LSU in the college football season, the official start of the NFL season, regular season games that matter, you know, plus the Labor Day weekend. You can also stop in the Rouse's and get everything you do to celebrate. Hang out with the two Saints legends, Bobby Hebert and Deuce McAllister, and our NFL and college football analyst Mike Dettillier. That's the Rouse's Market on Chapultepec tomorrow, 1 to 4 o'clock, right here on WWL and also on the free Odyssey app. Coming back with more Sports Talk, closing it out as we head to the weekend right here on WWL.
You made the 53, man. You've earned it. You had a hell of a journey from being an international practice squad guy to now you're on the 53, man. I mean, you got a viral clip on the internet of chasing down a guy. I think when we talk about building a culture and, you know, getting guys that have made it the right, they're going to do things, and the sign that's out there that says play like a Titan, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? You fit every last single one of those things. You don't know this, but where we were sitting at the game on Sunday in New Orleans, and New Orleans fans hate everybody. Mm-hmm. After you chase the guy down, the fans next to us, I was getting up to go do TV. Guy was like, you better not cut 89. And then the third quarter, you had a catch, and they start cheering for you, you know, which says a lot, you know what I mean? And that's a testament to your work. So, you know, it's guys like you, man, make our job hard.
Back here on Sports Talk, you're hearing Thomas Odukuwaya.
Odukoya. Yeah, that's the coach telling me he made the roster. The Titans like to do this thing where they call the players into their office on cutdown day and give them a heart attack, only to say, you made the roster. Congratulations. Because what do you think when the coach calls you in there? Definitely don't think
definitely
you made it.
Definitely not good news, right.
But it was funny because that's the guy who, if you remember, Samson Nakua's long field goal return. He's the guy who knocked him out of bounds at the end. He was actually their former international player. So Charlie Smith is the Saints international player. That was him last year. He was on the practice squad, and he made the roster this year. So,
do Saints fans really hate everyone?
I don't know, but apparently that's the reputation they have, which I found amusing. But, yeah, so at least someone made the roster because of that play.
Yeah, and right now Samson Nakua is still without a job.
Doesn't have a roster spot.
Who knows? Maybe eventually gets back on the Saints practice squad. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the show. Have a great Labor Day weekend. And, you know, guys, you have any wonderful plans, because mine's pretty much going to be on the couch or hopefully hanging out by a pool somewhere.
Well, my wife is in Montana, so I'm by myself. But
you and the dog.
I was going to try to golf tomorrow, and then I looked, there's an 80% chance of rain, so I'm not doing that. So, yeah, I think I'm going to maybe watch some Netflix, you know, hang out with a dog, pet a dog.
Anything exciting for you, Charlie, besides some baseball watching?
I have some competition with Mike Dettillier for week one of the college football season. So our pick six,
it's a standalone week.
It's just Mike versus me. And, you know, we got the first game both right because I count pushes as wins.
Right.
UNC minus two. That technically worked out against Minnesota last night. We got five games throughout the weekend that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. And
how many are different?
Three.
Okay.
Three of the remaining five. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Talk to you on Monday. It'll be Second Guess with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and Mike Dettillier, talking all about that LSU versus USC matchup. Have a good one, everyone, and have a great night.
Peace.
Later.